Reimagine. Traveling back to a time before the internet, before Mountain Dew Livewire, and before the Neo post-apocalypse. This summer, Apocalypse Video asked the question, where were you in 1982?
I mean, what happened? How did everything that was so good get so bad?
A time when men were men.
I got nowhere else to go! I got nowhere else to go!
Women were women.
You gotta be fucking kidding.
And mice could talk.
My son Timothy is so sick.
Join us all summer long as we celebrate the box office hits and misses of 1982. The date is July 9th, 1982. The Human League's Don't You Want Me sits atop the Billboard charts for its second week in a row. And a groundbreaking film from Walt Disney Pictures is about to bring cinema into the computer age. As video game whiz kid Kevin Flynn gets sucked into the world of The Grid. The film is Tron, and it's about to be de-rezzed now.
The ENCOM 511 computer. Center of the most calculating intelligence on Earth. Within it, there exists an unknown civilization where man has never been. A startling new world where time and distance defy the laws of logic.
I still do not understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence.
Kevin Flynn, computer genius, searching for answers inside the system.
Hey, it's the big master control program everybody's been talking about.
Stop, I'm warning you. I'm gonna have to put you on the game grid.
Propelled into the digital world of the computer itself.
Oh man, this isn't happening. It only thinks it's happening.
There's been a mistake. I gotta see the guy in charge.
You will.
Who's that guy?
That's Tron.
Trapped inside an electronic arena where love. Escape, do not compute. The journey begins across an electronic sea on cycles made of light. Enter its world this summer.
What the? Ryan, is it just me? I'm all glowy and stuff. Is it just me? Are you feeling this? Are you seeing this?
I don't know. Have you seen the movie Tron?
Yeah, I just did.
Oh, I thought you were going to do the Simpsons thing. Nope. Nope.
Any other episode, I would have said no. Well, there's a question. I don't know how long this is going to last. We might get de-rezzed before this episode is done, but I have seen Tron before. Is this your first time seeing Tron?
No.
I'm your host, Dave, by the way. I'm joined again by Ryan.
You know, Dave, on the other side of the screen, it all looks so easy.
Hey, Ryan, do you think I could have some of your popcorn?
Is that the movie?
I knew you weren't gonna know. I for some reason I fixated on that line. I'm like, What a weird line. It, well, like Alan, like in the beginning when he's in the office with the giant matte painting to make it look like there's 1,000 cubicles, some nerd asks him for his popcorn. It's very strange. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
Come on.
Hey, Alan. You think I can have some of your popcorn?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I got something to admit. I mean, I have seen Tron many times. I actually have seen it in 70mm film before, too.
Oh, wow.
In a theater.
That's a trip, man.
Yeah. And, you know, I got sucked into a video game.
That game is a good reason to. So you played it after you filmed it? Or
I tried to play it. I can't play it.
Okay.
What game is it?
It's called The Last of Us.
Is it out now?
It into,
oh, yeah. A few years ago, yeah.
Because I got sucked into a video.
Which
game,
one?
You know, Tron.
Uh-huh. That's Tron, of course.
One of the original
video game adaptations.
Right, man.
No one at that round table got that joke.
Tron, man. I didn't rewatch Tron this time around for this recording. I have seen it before. My pitch to you was I had more top to mind to me is actually Tron Ares. And I was like,
oh, wow. What?
And I was like, what if I just tell you what Tron Ares is about?
You're in the future, man. I'm stuck back here in the past.
The third Tron. I would say I like the vibes. I've said this before. I love all the vibes of Tron movies. I like the music in all the movies is actually really great.
Sound effects. Like when you saw this in 70mm, how was the sound like?
It was cool. It was great. Yeah. Right? It was a cool way to see it. I do think all of these movies are pretty damn like not followable and also boring or something.
Like, yeah, I had a thought. Like, I think I was on board with this movie. It had been a while since I've seen it, but I was on board with this movie, I think, for about the first half, maybe.
I don't think I've ever fallen asleep during a Tron movie.
It's that damn digital sailboat that they ride or whatever the fuck that is. Like, I nod off.
So, I don't know. I feel like I've seen Tron the first one a bunch of times. I can't really tell you much about it, I think, in a weird way.
And well, there's not much to it. I mean, so to get into the plot of Tron, there's not much here.
Tron, right, here we go.
So yeah, for Tron. So basically, it's like I'm assuming this is sort of a alternate reality kind of where there is a where computers. I mean, this is 1982, so like computers are becoming big, personal computers, and there's the mindset that computers do everything. However, in Tron, which presumably takes place in present day, this feels like sort of an alternate reality where computers literally do everything and are plugged into everything.
It's
and
they're kind of all, one of our favorite things, 80s future a little bit.
It feels like 80s future, and it's all everything kind of seems to go through this company called Encom, run by David Warner, who one of my favorite like on-screen bad guys. He just has one of those voices that just pulls you in.
Encom isn't the business you started in your garage anymore.
We're building accounts in 30 different countries, new defense systems. We have one of the most sophisticated pieces of equipment in existence.
Oh, I know all that. Sometimes I wish I were back in that garage.
That can be arranged, Walter.
That was uncalled for. You know, you can remove men like Alan and me from the system, but we helped create it. And our spirit remains in every program we design for this computer.
Walter, it's getting late. I've got better things to do than to have religious discussions with you. Don't worry about Encom anymore. It's out of your hands now.
Anyway, he plays the typical...
He's in Secret of the Ooze, Turtles 2.
Yes, yes. And you know what? Not phoning it in. He could have phoned it in that movie, but he chooses not to, and I have to commend him for
in
that.
In Turtles 2 or Tron?
Well, Turtles 2. But no, he's playing like a typical, you know, executive douchebag, and we find out... later on, we go over to the arcade, Flynn's Arcade, played by Jeff Bridges. He's Flynn. And we find out from Flynn that David Warner, who is now like a senior executive at Encom, which basically runs all computers more or less in this world, stole his idea for space. Let me look it up. I don't remember what it was called.
This video game.
I just wanted to say Space Pirates or something. What the hell was it called?
I just had it. What the hell is it?
It's an unremarkable name for a
space
computer
paranoid.
Game. Space paranoids.
What? It's kind of. Did you ever watch the *Halt and Catch Fire* show?
I saw, I think, the first two seasons. I never finished it.
I feel like the second season's all video games, isn't it? Did you get to that point?
Like online gaming or something?
Yeah.
Online gaming.
Yeah, I feel like. It takes place around the same time. About like the start of personal computers and online and stuff.
Like
and
83, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like in the third season, it fast forwards a few years, and Cameron, Mackenzie Davis, her character has become like a famous, like a Flynn kind of thing, whatever.
Okay.
But she's made a game, like a famous like computer game, and I feel like it's like the same type of name, like just generic. It's like Space Bikers or something like that, you know? It's just like...
Well, this is that era where Atari could make a game called, like, Tank
Football.
Battle or
Football.
Some shit. Or Football. It was the dawn of video games. You could just have a game called Baseball, and that was all you needed.
And that's what happened. I think it takes place, like, 89 of the third season or something like that. It's, like, around the... And she's going to conventions to, like, sign copies of, like, her game and hasn't had another hit since kind of thing. It's that kind of vibe.
Okay.
It's cool. Okay. The show's really great. I always recommend it to people because it's Mad Men in the 80s. It's great. So.
Well, I love the first two seasons. I just never got around to watching season three. But anyway, yeah, we go back to Tron, alternate future 1982. Flynn is saying that this asshole, David Warner, whose name is Dillinger, I love that his name is Dillinger in this movie, stole his game for Space Paranoids. And I guess another game. He basically went on to become the leader of NCOM or whatever, and Flynn basically just got pushed out. Now he's just running an arcade. And in his spare time, he is hacking the system. He's hacking the mainframe. You can't see it, audience, but I'm pushing up my sunglasses. This is really nerdy shit. I gotta say, Tron might be one of the nerdiest movies I've ever seen in my life.
it's so funny because it is so damn nerdy for... I guess it wasn't really a hit, so I guess it was pretty nerdy.
It's described online as it was a modest success. It cost $17 million to make, and it grossed around $50 million, which for 1982 is pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That's also a big budget for 1982. So,
yeah.
They wanted it to do Star Wars money. It did not make Star Wars money.
I think it could have, but yeah, it's pretty damn nerdy. You know, it's like if people could explain like the Star Trek movies to you.
Well,
like,
it's interesting.
Those are a lot better.
Like, before we started to record, I watched the Siskel and Ebert review of this, they liked that note that they didn't overly explain things.
Yeah.
And that was a thought I had watching this. I'm like, if you're someone in 1982, a lot of this stuff that they're not stopping to explain, I'm sure could like confuse people or fly over people's head. And only the hardcore nerdy Halt and Catch Fire people of the time are like, I know what that is. You know,
like bites and stuff. And it's like words like that.
Because that language just was not widespread. It wasn't widely known in 1982.
I feel like it wasn't until like 2004 or something.
For real, yeah. But this movie, it does do a decent job of showing us like, okay, like we're in the outside world. We're watching someone play a video game. And now we're zooming in. We're going into the computer. Now we're into the computer where this is real life. This is real stakes. You die in the game, you die for real. You know what I mean? It does a decent job of doing that, and we find out that Flynn is this ace programmer who used to work at NCOM, but had his computer game Space Paranoid stolen, and now the whole plot is about him and his friend Alan, who also plays Tron in the movie, and Lady, I can't remember her name.
And Lady.
She's not super important to the movie until the third act.
Cindy Morgan is the... Laura Bain?
Laura, yes, Laura. They break into NCOM. Flynn is going to jump on this computer to inside to try to hack in and get the file that proves that he created Space Paranoids and not Dillinger. But in the meantime, while he's working on this, someone we haven't mentioned yet, the main villain of the movie, Master Control Program. Is that what it is?
I think so.
I'm sorry, these things are so fucking nerdy.
It's Master Control. Warner. Yeah. is MCP.
Master Control, which is a program that I guess David Warner created a long time ago, has now become this intelligence that's sucking up everything. It's plugging into everything, including the Pentagon. It wants more data, and it's basically becoming what we all know AI is quickly becoming current day, mm-hmm. which is just, it's Skynet. It's becoming Skynet. It's like, I'm 2,021 times smarter than you are, Dillinger. And he's kind pissed off that
Agent Smithy, kind of a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. He's pissed off that Flynn keeps trying to break in. And if he gets so pissed off, he's like, I'm going to digitize you with this new laser and put you into the game and vindictively put you through the game, not kill you immediately. He tells, I don't remember its name, but the David Warner proxy within the grid. He tells him, like, I don't want you to kill him immediately.
I've got a little challenge for you, Sark, a new recruit. He's a tough case, but I want him treated in the usual manner. Train him for the games, let him hope for a while, and blow him away.
You got it. I've been hoping you'd send me somebody with a little bit of guts. What kind of program is he?
He's not any kind of program, Sark. He's a user.
A user?
That's right. He pushed me in the real world. Somebody pushes me, I push back, so I brought him down here.
Let him get some hope, and then kill him. There's some interesting things in here that the movie doesn't delve super into, like the fact that the master program, or the master control program, is vindictive. Like, it seems to have, in addition to gaining access to all these things and getting super smart, it kind of has, it's like learned emotion. To me, it's very emotional in this movie, I think.
I think so. I mean, they all like look like they get pain when they get killed or whatever, you know?
And there's interesting things that this movie had, interesting beats. Like, there's the idea that all of the programs that we see in the grid that are displayed by, like, dumpy looking, got normal looking people, were programs for other things. Like, there's one guy, I don't know his name, but he played Billy the Kid in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Oh, it's Ram. He plays Ram. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I worked for like a savings and loan. I was like a savings and loan program. So what's happening is the master control program is pulling all of these programs from various other things, like, for instance, a savings and loan, and putting them in video games and having them kill each other. And he basically, like, absorbs their knowledge, I guess, or something.
Wow.
But there's an interesting idea here that NCOM, I guess, is just all computers in this world?
I guess so. Oh, like, they've kind of, like, they're like the... Like, there's no competitors, no Windows to the Apple.
Seemingly not. It seems like everything is plugged into NCOM, or somehow Master Control Program is just hacking in and pulling programs from other systems.
I mean, that doesn't seem too far-fetched for today also, I think.
Not for today, no.
I guess at the time, maybe they expected that or something, or I don't know.
I guess I'm looking at this from a 1982 perspective, where it's just like, there's no internet in 1982, at least not as we know it. Like, you would have to hardwire into different systems at this time, I would think. But again, this is the 80s future, so.
I mean, it was probably, there wasn't many computers. I mean, you can make your own computer, and there's lots of different kinds and stuff, but like, there probably was only like a few like ones that were public, probably, that like people.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Probably, it's kind of always been the same, you know, bit.
Yeah, it's interesting that this movie seems to suggest that NCOM is essentially just plugged into literally every computer.
They're probably like
system.
Thinking it was like IBM, you know, at the time.
Yeah, something. Yeah. And there's also like the interesting idea that like the programs in this movie. And to get back to the plot for briefly, so Flynn gets sucked into Tron, or I keep wanting to say Tron. He gets sucked into the grid. He's in the computer world by Master Control Program, who wants him killed. And in the meantime, he meets up with Tron. He tells him he's a user eventually, and what they need to do is get the, this is where the movie kind of loses me.
Yeah.
It's like, what Flynn needs to do. He's like, I'm looking for the proof that shows that I created this video game so that I could basically go to the press or something. But Tron is trying to do this thing where it's like, Master Control Program has like, cut off access to all the programs. I can remember when I could see Grandpa Guy, like the Keymaster, whoever the fuck he is, in that room, and I could just do whatever I wanted. I could talk to the users whenever I wanted. Now we can't do that. It's all red. Remember when it used to be blue? And so Tron's mission is basically, I guess, to just kill Master Control Program and talk to the users again?
I don't know. That's the thing. You're going to guide me through this. I was going to say,
this
I always been
in, like in the middle of the movie.
And I always just like, I mean, the name Tron is really good. But why is
it's
he?
It's a great, great.
Why
name.
Is he Tron when he's kind of feels like these kind of in all the these movies character. They're almost like side character Tron. Like they're trying to like they even made the poster look like Luke Skywalker. Like with
well,
you know?
I kept saying like they got sucked into Tron. It's like no, they got sucked into the grid. Like
why
the
is there a game
world,
called Tron or something? Like
well, there is a separate game later called Tron. I think, but it's just like why isn't the world called Tron? It seems like that is what it should be called, right?
I think so. It's very, it's always been confusing. You know how many times I've seen this movie. I just don't, I don't get Tron really. Other than he's just like this deus ex machina hero kind of guy or something. Like, especially
he's
in his
like
legacy.
He's like a secure, they call it, they say that he's a, Alan, his program, his user says that Tron is a security program that could, it's a security program to make sure there's no fishy stuff.
I don't think Tron is mentioned in Tron Ares. I swear to
really?
God, I don't think there's.
See,
Tron.
And that makes that. I feel like that would make one think that the world is called Tron. The computer world is called Tron. That makes more sense to me.
I'm looking at like the because I mean I saw this movie's another one that I could barely tell you what went down, but there's nothing regarding other than like I think like Jeff Bridges shows up in the, you never saw it right in the movie.
I've seen the first two.
Okay, well, in the third one he goes back to. The old, it's kind of cool actually. There's the only part I like where, and it's you have to deal with freaking Jared Leto, but he goes back to the old Tron, like there's a, like the
like
new
version one,
and Jeff Bridges is there, and he talks about like, oh, you're a Tron and stuff like that. Mm. And that's the only time it has nothing to do with him, though. Kind of, it's almost just like Jeff Bridges is like, you have the power, man, that kind of thing. I don't know, like you can change things, man. It's like basically that scene, you know. But it's kind of cool to see like a recreation of the old Tron, you know, in the new one. I don't know. That movie wasn't very good, but it does. It's all visuals and stuff. I think that they. I don't know. They made. It's weird. They keep trying with Tron to do something with this, but I find it confusing. It's weird. Yeah.
It's I think the best attempt they did at this was Tron Legacy. For me, that's the one that visually I think the world looks the best. And I can't speak for Ares, but for
you're
Tron
right.
Legacy, I think the world looks the best. The sound and the vibes, the music are the best. This one, the sound is great. The problem I've had with the original Tron is that I think it's an interesting idea getting sucked into a computer world. And you're like, I love the opening of Tron Legacy where he's just like, the grid, a digital frontier. I always wondered what it looked like inside. Like, were the programs like, were they ride around on motorcycles, man? You know, that like that's interesting to think like what the world inside the computer looks like.
You just, something you just messed me up too with Ares, I guess. Is I always figured in Legacy, this is the Tron. It's just the new version of it. Like it's not supposed to be like a new version. You know, we're seeing the same world.
Well, if I recall, in Tron Legacy, they do create like a new world.
It is. It is. That, it's not like just supposed to be the same thing.
It's different.
It is different. Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
I always figured it was just like, oh, we're just seeing the same. This is what they maybe imagined.
Well, it's like Star Trek. Like when you watch like, you know, Abrams Star Trek, it's like, it just looks better than it did in the show.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always thought. And then when they do this new thing in Ares where they go back to the original version, I was like, but it was the same. I don't know. It just grew. I don't know. That's why
I think it started as this, and then I went in there after I had my adventure on the grid and we made a new grid, you know, man?
I guess so, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. But I wish I had more to say.
Well, like I have two problems. Like I think we nailed on one of them already. I think the second half of the original Tron is slow and kind of meandering. It's like the first half is kind of fun. It's like it's introduced to the world, the idea that like, oh shit, like when we're playing a video game, for instance, like if you go into the world of the computer game, it's life or death stakes. Like when you kill the computer's dead. You know what I mean? And so that's an interesting idea, and getting sucked into that is interesting, and interacting with the programs and the idea that a user versus a program, and a user is basically God. But the second half it becomes boring. It's just like, we're introduced to like these fun concepts, but then it just ultimately degrades into we're riding on this sail ship and we're just going in a straight line, and there's, we're shooting some lasers and some things, and that's it. I was nodding off in the second half of this movie, but that's one problem.
I mean,
second problem for me, and this really is only for the first Tron. I'm sorry, the visuals of this movie, I'm sure they were great for 1982. Siskel and Ebert certainly loved them, but to me, it's the problem I have with a lot of Nintendo 64 games. These graphics, this era, like this look to me, just it's not visually appealing to me.
I like it. I think I like that.
I like the costumes. I like the light up effects on their costumes, but like it's just so. It feels like I'm watching like a really old library video or something. You know what I mean?
See, I think I have I think there's something about that I like, though. I don't know. I think that's what holds up the best, probably, in the movie.
Oh, really?
In a weird way. I mean, not that it. I wouldn't say it's like it holds up impressively, but just for like the time and what they imagined, I think is cool. I like that.
Well,
stuff.
I certainly for the time. I mean, I think this movie is totally deserving of its. It's a landmark movie in terms of visual effects.
It's crazy. I was just re-seeing this that it was disqualified at the Oscars because they considered computer cheating. Computer graphics cheating.
Wild.
Which is crazy because it's kind of what people talk about with like AI shit, which is true. It's weird. It's like crazy things. But these were the nominees, though, the year it would have been nominated.
It was Star Trek 2.
No. There's only three nominees. Yeah. It was Poltergeist.
Okay.
Blade Runner. Yeah. And E.T. Which one? E.T. won.
E.T. won. Yeah, I think I said Star Trek too. I think that might have gotten edged out by those other two movies. It would have been nominated.
Well, they probably. I don't know why they didn't do five, but maybe they at the time they just liked these ones. But Blade Runner is one of those movies that you're like, wow, that was the same year. You're right. You're kind of right, I think, in a weird way, because that movie looks awesome. So, do I have the right one? Do I have the right year of the Oscars?
No, yeah, you got it.
Okay.
Well, I guess it would be the 83 Oscars.
Yeah. Because I mean, like, I'm looking at it and all the movies we're covering is in here, like Diner and stuff like that. So I'm like,
it's like, I get that. I get why E.T. won. I mean, that whole movie hinges on that puppet, which is an effect, a special effect. So I get it.
Mm-hmm.
This was before they had a visual effects category, right?
It is best visual effects.
It is visual. Okay.
And so I think I'm trying to see when they maybe changed the name. I think it was just Special Effects Award. The first year, it was Engineering Effects Award, then Special Effects Award. And then I think by this time, they changed it to Visual Effects. In the 60s, it changed to Visual Effects.
I guess the idea that they called it cheating at the time.
It's kind of crazy.
I'm trying to compare it to today and then AI. Like when someone says like, no, I did it. I entered the prompt and it made the thing. That was me that did that.
The thing is,
no, you didn't.
And the thing is that the computer wasn't doing anything by itself at this time.
Exactly. I feel like
they were just drawing in the computer, basically.
That's what it sounded like. They were essentially at this time, like more or less just animating through the computer.
Yeah. There wasn't really anything doing itself. So I don't know. It's just interesting. Yeah. I think it's fascinating stuff when you read things like that. I'm trying to find an actual resource of where they're saying it's cheating. But I don't know. Anyway, I like the look of it. I think it's like that retro future kind of stuff is kind of fun sometimes. Like I think it could be bad in like a... like if you're watching like a B movie of like even like the early 90s and there's like really bad special effects or something, but like for something about this, and it's so, I think it's cool because it is like its own thing. Like nothing else looks like this.
Well, I will say it's definitely, I think, a big point in this movie's favor is the sound. Like, so you said you saw this in 70 millimeter mm-hmm. in a theater. I watched this in our viewing booths with Atmos sound. Ooh. And they, I don't know if they added any sound effects to the Atmos track, but it sounded great. And as you mentioned, like that retro 80s sound, like I that is a point in this movie's favor, I think. I do love that. And it does kind of help the visuals for me, which are underwhelming, but
yeah, and like, I don't know, like, it has a great score that Wendy Carlos that yeah. did The Shining and Clockwork Orange. And,
like you said, great vibes. Vibes in this vibes. Movie are off the chart.
It's all vibes. It's just boring as fuck. Sorry, Tron. I mean, it's funny because a friend that I've gone to see this with loves Tron. It's like their Star Wars and stuff. And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's all vibes.
Well, I just, well, because like I said, the first half is kind of exciting as much as this can be, because it's just like the idea of like I love the scene when Bridges gets sucked into the grid. I think it's really well done.
Yeah, it's really
and
cool.
I kind of
scary, yeah.
It's kind of scary. It's like kind of 2001. It's like he's going through this portal almost, and then he digitizes. And there's a great shot where you see his point of view as he's looking down at his hands and the lights are going off.
Like kind of like
it makes
scream.
Me. Yeah, you see him get digitized, and it digitizes each of his fingers off one at a time, which I'm sure for 1982 freaked people out. But it makes me wish that the movie didn't open with us seeing the people, the Tron people yeah. on the grid.
Yeah,
because it kind of sucks out the air a little bit from the Bridges moment, a little bit.
Yeah, I think you should be always in his point of view.
Like, yeah. I think like that is a big point in the sequel's favor. We don't see the world of Tron until the hero of the movie is on the grid for the first time. We're experiencing it with him.
Who is that actor? That guy doesn't
like,
exist.
But it's like in this. But it's like I almost sort of understand why they feel they need to do this, because they need to show the general concept of the movie up front, where it's like, here's the real world. And here is what the inside of the world looks like. But it's like, I just wish that they had done that in a way where we are revealed that at the same time that it's revealed to Jeff Bridges. It's yeah. kind of a bummer, honestly.
Yeah. That's why I feel like I always fell with this movie, is I think it could have been, I think it does need like a Star Wars touch. It needs like that kind of like a Marshall Lucas like magic or something. You know what I mean?
Well, because it's like for the second half, it's just him riding in a ship. Like Bill dies. He's like, all right, man, I'm riding around in my little geometry war ship. I'm just flying around. I'm going to pick up that girl. Okay, now we're flying around on the sailboat, man.
Yeah.
It's like there's not enough action. Like in the first half, they're getting pursued by people. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, shit, I'm going to put you on the grid and you're going to have to fight. All right, fine. I'll fight one of my own. Oh, I don't want to kill him. All right, now you fight in the motorcycle thing. It feels like there's momentum. But in the second half, it's just like, and we're riding along, man, just not a care in the world.
Can you remind me how it ends?
So basically, like, they're being pursued by the little geometry warships.
Yeah,
and at one point, Jeff Bridges like puts his hand down in like the beam or whatever that they're riding their sailboat on. It creates like a junction where they go onto a different path, like a train, and then they go into they call it the input output. It's the big light that goes into the sky. That's like the essentially like the communications thing. That's what they use to speak to the users or whatever. It's essentially how a user would get in and out of this world, the grid. Mm-hmm. They're flying in there. Master Control puts himself inside the David Warner guy, like within the grid that's been chasing Jeff Bridges the whole movie. But then he ends up getting killed. They Tron throws this little disc, which has been imbued, I guess, with the powers of the user or something. It like cuts his head off. It's like, it's kind of a cool moment. I don't know if you remember this. It like, he like hits him in the head and you see like the little digital circuits or whatever in like the pop of his head. He like scalps him, basically. He dies. Mm-hmm. And that's when Jeff Bridges goes into he gets the information he needs, the proof that he created Space Paranoids. He goes up, and the suggestion is that like, now that Master Control is dead, there's now no longer something that's like keeping the programs from speaking to their users. It's free now. It's like an open world area. It's open source, man. You know?
Wow.
All the red lights turn blue, man. Just, yeah.
Yeah. You can, yeah, that's, And then it's over, right? Does he you don't see,
and, well,
see
and,
him
it's
go
so
back?
Funny. The, yeah, like basically, like he gets out, and then David Warner in the real world is sitting at his desk. He looks at his computer screen. There's like a printout, and he's like, "Oh shit!" Like he was able to get the, and the proof that Jeff Bridges needed is simply just a printout of saying like, "Yeah, this Flynn created the game. This guy stole it." That's essentially all it is. It's kind of crazy.
And do you think like people, I guess in this world would care? They'd be like, "Yes, he got him," or something. I guess.
I
think it's more personal.
Well, it seems like no one at NCOM likes David Warner, so I'm sure everyone at the company would be like, "Yeah, fuck that guy. Get Flynn in. He's cool. He's an arcade." But the next shot, yeah, the next shot is basically they're on the roof. It's the next day or something. A chopper lands. And Jeff Bridges gets out and he's like, "All right, I'll see you later, man." And he meets up with Alan and what's her face. And the suggestion is like, "All right, well, he just got out of a helicopter. He landed on the roof. I guess he owns the place now. The end."
Wow.
It's kind of crazy. It kind of just ends.
That's crazy. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, okay, cool."
It kind of just ends. And we should say this is not a long movie. It's only like an hour and a half long.
It doesn't feel that way, I would say.
No, it feels a little longer. Again, it's that second half where they need to be pursued the whole movie. It just feels like they just are just kind of like, you know, chilling at the end of the movie, writing. Like, it doesn't feel like they're being pursued.
This is only 90 minutes. Do you think that, because imagine if it had like a Marsha Lucas that cut the hell out of it to make it look exciting. It wouldn't be enough to be 90 minutes, probably. And they just like... You'd think maybe they would have like more cut away to the real world or something more. Or
yeah.
Something like,
yeah. Well, yeah, because once Jeff Bridges goes in, I don't think you cut back to the real world after that.
I don't think so. No.
Well, the only times you do, I think, is when maybe the master control program is like talking to David Warner, possibly one or two times. But that's it. You don't like, there's no scene of like, you know, Alan, the guy who makes Tron, on the outside, like, "Come on, Flynn's running out of time. We got to do this, that, and the other thing to try to help him." Like, there's none of
and
that.
And then what happens to Tron at the end of this movie, too?
Tron is basically just like, "All right, he made it out. Now, look, everything's turned blue again. We can, like, talk to our users. This is great." Like, that's kind of it. It's very much like, okay, so what happened? What can they do now?
That we couldn't see before? Like, you never see anybody.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Well, it's like, I guess that's, I mean, at the very least, you know, there's no master control program that is like, you know, forcing these other programs from other things to like fight in video games. So there's that. There's no one.
They beat fascism in the row. And
they beat fascism, I guess. And now they can do whatever. I don't know.
Freedom.
Those are the things that it would be nice if, like, if, you know, if the movie really got into like, well, what was it like before them? And they just say, "Oh, it was better." Okay, well, how? Like, what were the programs doing before Master Control came in? That, you know what I mean? They don't really get into that.
I'd be very curious to like hear how they came on this story, I would say, because if it was maybe more visual first and then story or something, I don't know. That's kind of feels like how these movies are a little bit. But
I think this movie could break, like I said, like beef up the world a little bit. What was it like before? What are we trying to get back? I mean, beyond just, you know, this asshole got in charge and now he's making us fight in the arena, essentially. Like, what was it like beforehand? What are you trying to achieve other than getting rid of that guy? What was the world like? And also, like, I think what you said, they need to cut back to the outside world a bit more.
Maybe it's a way to break it up a little bit, you know,
to break it up. And also, they just need to be pursued more. Like, I feel like the action just, in the second half of the movie, it's like, are they even being chased anymore?
Yeah, it's like we talked about these before. This is one of the probably top 10 movies you could put on in a bar. You know what I mean? I think it, or like some sort of arcade, barcade or something like that. And I think that's it. Don't need any. That's, and I think all the movies, other than the freaking Ares, I think, work that way. I think Tron Legacy, even though it is a little bit more, better with the action and visuals and stuff, I think it's similar. I think it does fall into like a weird sort of boring trap in the middle.
Well, I think the same thing happens in Tron Legacy, where the second half or maybe the last third, like, it's just them on that floaty sailboat thing, and it's just like, get some more action in here. What's going on?
Can I tell you a little bit about Ares? Do you know anything about that one? Tron Ares?
Yeah, well, what's the future of Tron like, man?
I'm kind of been like skimming the synopsis just to like remember
because you're
very forgettable, but like,
you know, it's all right. It happens to the best of us when we transition to the grid, man. Yeah. You lose some information.
It's just, I remember from the trailers from that one, it looked bad from the start where they were like bringing the Tron into the real world. Do you remember that?
Like, that's how the second movie ends. Like, he brings Olivia Wilde through with him, who is a program. True. And the suggestion is, like, they seem to suggest at the end of that movie, if I recall, that, like, oh, they could potentially bring, like, cures for things.
So, in this one,
a new life form.
Freaking, of course, it has to be related because it's the only thing. The grandson of Dillinger is now the CEO of NCOM. And is basically like presenting like a new, like a master control perfect soldier that's expendable kind of thing. And that's supposed to be Jared Leto. And he's bringing him from Tron land. And they almost like 3D print him a bunch of times. The thing is that they have like a limited time, how long they can last in the real world. They haven't like cracked the case. And that's the whole thing. It's like, and then there's a secondary thing with Greta Lee from Past Lives is she seemed to maybe have figured it out. To like make it go longer.
Is she like a human like computer? She's like scientist a computer scientist.
She's like in the Antarctica and she's like trying to like print like trees is like the whole idea, you know?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like a computer print a tree or something, you know, 3D print like a living tree kind of thing. And then, it's like only lasts for like half an hour is like the idea, which is like, it just seems like, seems convoluted. It's like, I don't know, already, just from the start, like just like, I don't know. But that's the whole idea. But then, like, basically Jared Leto, like, wants to, like, live and is trying to, like, figure it out. And it's almost does, like, this Edge of Tomorrow, you know, type of scenario of him
is
trying.
Is he kind of the good guy?
He kind of is, like, presented as the bad guy, but he's sort of the good guy from the start. Like, it's not really, there's supposed to be, like, a change of heart kind of thing that happens, but he's really he's the main character of the movie, you know?
And he exists in the real world through the whole movie?
No, it bounces between him. Like, he's like the basically the lead security in
Tron.
In the grid. But there's like red and blue fighting there too. You know, like the red guys are bad guys and there's blue guys fighting each other and stuff.
Huh.
It's. And the thing is that when it cuts to the grid stuff, it doesn't look as good as Tron Legacy did. Or at least like it's a little bit more random feeling. Even that movie was so long ago. And then they do a lot of stuff with like they the stuff in the real world. It's kind of like, I don't know. It just feels like, I don't know. Like it feels like somewhat like old, like a movie that would have came out like in the 90s, like a remake of like imagine they were like remade a TV show or a cartoon and you're like, we're going to bring it into the real world. You know, like, what's an example? Like, you know, like there was all those like the cartoons, like the like maybe like Scooby Doo or like Brady Bunch is a bad example because it's like that was a spoof. But you know what I mean? Like almost we can't have them be in their modern their world. We need to bring them to the modern world. It kind of feels like that in a weird way. Like the whole movie. Mm. I don't know. But like it has Nine Inch Nails soundtrack, which is kind of fun. I would say
that's the only thing these movies have really had going for them is that soundtracks.
Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty forgettable, I would say. Yeah, and
well, I can't say I had high hopes for it.
No, I think at the time, like I have a buddy that's way in the Tron, and I was like, you know what, I've been, you know, like our own traveler, Eric Smooth was, you know, gotten the Nine Inch Nails. I feel like in the recent years, and so I wanted to hear it, you know, in big IMAX. Stuff in 3D. I watched it in 3D actually, which is kind of fun now because there's not many 3D movies anymore. But it's kind of like fun to do that. I feel like, you know,
it finally kind of died down. Now it's like when an Avatar comes out, we'll watch it in 3D.
Yeah, which is kind of fun. I don't know. It's like, yeah, for like a movie like this, like you're just like, ah, what the fuck? I will watch it in 3D. Who cares? You know, now it's like the novelty has like come back around to the point of like it kind of you're not sick of it anymore. You're kind of like, oh, cool, 3D. but no, it was not great and stuff, I would say. I was reading a thing that they basically probably made this movie because they were making a Tron roller coaster in Florida. And so
to reignite interest.
It's almost like we need to do both. kind of at the same time.
We essentially need a trailer for the ride.
For the ride, yeah. Because I think there's been a Tron like roller coaster like overseas. Maybe it's like in like Japan or something for a long time. It's been like really popular.
Where you're like on the cycles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's been like really popular for like since like Legacy came out. And they were like, well, we want to put it in Florida. We got to come out with a movie so people know what the hell this is.
Because people don't remember Tron Legacy. Yeah.
But no.
If there's a company that has enough money to make like a $200 million movie, which essentially acts as a trailer for a ride,
yeah,
it's Disney.
That's really what it is. I really think that's what, because like everyone was like, why does this, who cares? Like, I don't think kids are like nostalgic for Tron. I mean, I think if I was young, because we went and saw all this shit, anything that came out when we were like, preteens, I feel like. Yeah. And I probably wouldn't have went and saw Tron Ares, and I probably would have thought it was cool. You know, I mean, maybe not. I mean, I guess if me in 2002 would have felt that. I don't know how now a kid is just like wants to be on their phone or something, you know, or whatever. So, but
well, we grew up during a time, you know, during the 90s when like, you know, even like a movie that comes to mind, like is Volcano.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good movie, but you're like, oh, that's the one with the volcano in it. Did you see the trailer with like they're running for the lava? It looks so awesome. You know,
oh no, like, yeah. Or I would like go see like XXX or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I try to think of other ones. Like, I guess Count of Monte Cristo isn't really like that, but I don't know, something like, I'll go see everything, you know? Like, no, I saw Rollerball.
It was because CGI felt like such a new thing. And it's like, oh, did you see the trailer? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, let's go see Rollerball, man. Like, yeah, like So I probably would have thought Tron Ares was kind of fun, you know, but because it was passable. Like, it wasn't it wasn't an overly terrible movie or anything like that. It just was just
Do you prefer Tron Ares to Tron?
That's a good question. I would say no, because I do like, but it's probably like 1, 2, 3, really, I think. I mean, I think. Because I do think I watched Legacy before Tron Ares, thinking like, oh, I haven't watched that since it came out. Let me rewatch that. And I thought the same. I was just like, oh, it's boring too. Like, it was kind of like. So I don't know. But I think the soundtracks do have lasting legacies, you know? And yeah. And I think that's fun. There's not, I feel like soundtracks don't quite get the, you know, the pop like they used to, you know? And it's cool that these do. And are exciting. Yeah.
I remember when Tron Ares came out, like that was the thing. It seemed like the vibe was like, well, the movie's probably shit, but hey, have you heard the soundtrack? It's pretty rocky.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's overly terrible. Like, all these movies are cool, I think. In a weird, I guess Jared Leto's not very cool. It's weird that he's in that movie. If it was, I think it probably would have been an interesting movie if it was maybe like a,
anyone else.
I don't know, Paul Mescal or something. I don't know. There's somebody that's like fun to watch or something these days.
But, that the kids like.
But they kept trying to make the Jared Leto work, you know? But no, it's just interesting. Like, I think these movies, I wish that they were better. They're one of those things where it's like, there's a good movie in there somewhere.
Well, I think for me, the best one is Tron Legacy because the vibes, I think, are like up to 11 with that movie. Like, I also appreciate that in Tron Legacy, they get a little more into weird stuff of the world. Like, you know, they're like the, I forget the character's name, but Flynn's son, when he's getting suited up to be put on in the arena or whatever, you get what these characters that feel like overly robotic. They like come out of the wall. They're like in the wall and they come out and they have sort of a robot walk and they're like these sexy ladies and they suit them up. Like, and then you get Michael Sheen who's doing like the crazy weird thing with the guitar. He's at the entertainer program. Like they do a little more weird shit. And I feel like the vibes are a bit more fun in that movie, even though the second, like the third act gets a little boring. For me, Tron Legacy is the one where the vibes are doing it the most for me.
I know this is the whole point of this damn summer film fest, but it's so crazy looking at like the weekends, like what came
every
out.
Weekend, and in some cases it was like doubled up.
Well, it's like I'm looking like, so E.T. I'm sure is probably wrecking house, and that came out in June 11th, so it's probably like just killing forever.
It took over the summer,
but like in between June 11th. Before the week before that was Wrath of Khan and Poltergeist, same weekend.
Jeez.
So that was on the 4th of July. Next week is E.T. And I'm going to skip the crap like Grease 2 in between these. But then you get Blade Runner the same day as Megaforce, which you watched. Same day as The Thing.
Jesus.
The week after that, last week's episode, The Secret of Nim. Then we got Tron, which was by itself, and no one went and saw Tron, I guess, or did okay.
It did okay.
But then you got 2 weeks later, the next episode, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, you know? And I guess July, maybe they started pulling movies out because of E.T. was going crazy.
It starts to quiet down a little
bit. But August comes back. August, you got Fast Times, you got Friday 13th Part 3, Officer and the Gentleman. So August comes back, but I think for most of
July quiets down a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a crazy.
Like, I think Disney was hoping Tron was going to be the Star Wars. Like, we're going to own July.
And that little alien, that little fucker, that Reese's Piece and eaten alien, he took over. Yeah, it's Spielberg summer, man, with Poltergeist in there.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, E.T. became the highest grossing movie of all time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Even besting Star Wars. There's that famous ad. I think it was in Variety, maybe, or something. It was like a cartoon that shows E.T. basically, I forget what it is. He's like beating this. It's like George Lucas congratulating his friend Steven, like, hey, you know, you beat me, man. Well done, or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's fun. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I love seeing like what was around that time, and this is what's fun about doing this 1 year like this. I think too. But
and meanwhile, the executives are, there's probably some executive at Disney that's like, I don't know, putting a gun in his mouth when he sees the returns for Tron.
Probably make this nerd shit, you know. It's crazy though that Wrath of Khan too is that, because
there's someone at Disney like, we could have made Star Wars. He came to us, fucking Lucas came to us. We could have made Star Wars. We turned him down. What the fuck were we thinking?
But maybe it wouldn't have worked, you know. Maybe Disney would have been too in the weeds with it,
yeah.
You know, because it is like his own movie, like it's like an independent film, basically, you know?
And Empire too, right?
Well, maybe not the first one.
I think
one.
The original Empire, trilogy was kind of mostly him.
I have a feeling that maybe that they, I think so. Maybe it was, yeah.
Empire, or, well, New Hope was definitely more or less him. Mm-hmm. Second movie, it's like, I think he the first movie had become so big and he made so much money that he basically took like a loan from a bank, I think, to make Empire, right?
I think so. Something crazy like
that.
If
I recall. I don't recall what the deal was with Return of the Jedi, but at that point, it was probably something the studio was like, whatever, he made the two most successful movies of all time. Just do whatever you want, George. Yeah. Sure. You want to put little Muppets in there? Fine.
Yeah, even I think he pre-sell this toys or something to make Empire or something like that. Like, I don't know. It's something like, or no, that was a Phantom Menace. That was what he did for Phantom Menace.
That was Menace. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
that was Menace. I never heard someone call it Menace. That's kind of funny, I think.
Menace. Well, that's Tron.
I'm sorry. I feel like I don't know. I don't want to drop the disc on this one, but you know, I feel like.
No, like I said, before we started recording, I'm like, I don't have too many notes here because, like, again, I was nodding off during the second half. I think that it loses its momentum once Billy the Kid dies from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And it's just him riding around in the little thing. And that's kind of the movie for the second half. And
yeah,
it's just, I don't know.
No, I feel like I was a little harsh on it, but I think they're cool that they exist, these movies and stuff. And I think they're worth watching at some point. And I think if you can make a good thing, like do it in a theater, if you can, you know, like take in a lot of the visuals and the sound, I think that's probably what's worthwhile. And Jeff Bridges is cool looking in this movie, I think, you know, like even in the beginning, and I love when he gets digitized and stuff. So maybe there's like a cool YouTube, like, 15-minute version you can watch yourself.
I think you nailed it. It's just like, it's an interesting concept that just, it feels a little half-baked. It doesn't feel like they truly got into the potential of what this concept could have presented, I think. Yeah. I don't know.
And this came out like in Disney's like low period too. So it's like, yeah. It was one of those things like, wow, Tron really didn't work and didn't do what we wanted it to do. What are we going to do? And they're still like another 8 years away, whatever, from Little Mermaid. So
They had a big swing a few years earlier, which we covered on the show, Black Hole. Oh, yeah. That failed. That was their attempt at a Star Wars. That failed. This is their next big swing, Tron. And
even
best,
the poster.
It's like,
good poster. It looks like Star Wars.
It's a great poster. Yeah. And it's got a cool trailer, but it's just like, it just didn't quite, like you said, it was a modest success. Not what they were hoping for. And again, I it's surprising that
they made two sequels that did well,
strong,
that did
man.
Bad, too.
It's surprising that Tron Legacy came out, and it seemed like it had the same amount of success as the first Tron. It's like, it was a modest success, and evidently it seems like this it lived on based on the strength of the soundtrack and a theme park in Japan. It's like, it lived on in that way. That's the legacy of Tron.
Yeah, I mean, I think just it's just like that damn Simpsons bit, like, no one's seen Tron, but they know Tron.
But we know of it.
Homer, this is your physician, Dr. Julius Hibbert. Can you tell us what it's like in there?
It's like, did anyone see the movie Tron?
No.
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 Yes. I mean, no. No.
Well, I'm going to give this a passing recommendation,
a light recommendation,
based on the vibes. The vibes are strong.
I think, I totally, 100%. It's great. Put it on in your arcade, in your barcade. Put it on the TV.
In your Flynn's.
People will love it. It's a great one to, like, look up while you're, like, waiting for your turn in Mario Party, you know? I'm saying, like, yeah. So that's probably,
or if you're at the bar getting a drink and you can't get the bartender's attention, you're just looking up at the screen.
Yeah, you take a picture of it, you send it to your group chat, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
What movie am I watching, guys? It's like, well, it's a pretty easy one, right?
Well, you try to get like a weird shot, you know, like maybe you can get the beginning before, if you're lucky, you can get a shot of like the beginning with in the real world, which.
Oh, we should mention, I didn't realize this, but the old grandpa program. I forget his name. He's the one. He looks like he's wearing like a giant dildo hat, and he's in a giant throne room, and he's the one that's in charge of like letting people talk to users or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that guy is the same guy who played the grandpa in The Lost Boys.
Ooh.
I was like, who is this guy? I recognize this guy. His voice is familiar. It's the grandpa from Lost Boys. All these damn computer programs.
I'm sorry, Dave, but I missed that episode too. I've never seen Lost Boys.
The movie?
I never seen it.
Seriously?
Yeah, never seen
you're
it.
You're pulling my leg.
I missed the episode that it was playing, or we did it.
I know you weren't on the episode, but you've seen the movie.
No,
surely.
I've never seen it.
What?
You should do another one so I can watch it.
We'll do a second take.
No, I got the episode saved until I watch it. Basically, my whole feed of Apocalypse Video is episodes that I wasn't on, that of movies I haven't seen, basically.
Well, definitely add Lost Boys. I think you'll really enjoy it. I think you'll certainly enjoy it more than Tron.
Just today, Phoebe Bridgers came out with a song called Lost Boys, if that means anything to you. You know.
Oh, really? Okay.
Speaking of
singers, that's a good transition. So Light recommends for Tron.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out once if you can.
Yeah.
But when we return from Where Were You in 82... we'll be feeling the rhythm a little bit, and things are going to get a little sexy as we visit the best little whorehouse in Texas.
It's just a little, what's the fucking line? It's so funny. Don't worry. It's just a little shit. She says not shit stain. It's like, it's her song in the beginning of the movie. Damn it.
It's just a little bit of this and country place. Nothing much to see.
Yeah, it's just a little bitsy pissant country place.
Oh, Dolly, you're so charming. Well, I can't. I've never
ain't
seen
nothing
this
much
movie.
To
I've
see. Ain't nothing much to see. Just a little pissant country place.
It ain't no grid, I'll tell you that.
Yep. I think Dave's gonna fucking love this movie. He's gonna be. This is a new. Damn, that Dirty Dancing. The other one, Flash Dance.
Really?
Nah, maybe not. I don't know, but I could see it. That's my prediction.
Okay.
I'm gonna roll the dice.
This is a musical, right?
It is. Yeah, I'm gonna roll the dice.
Okay.
All right.
You're going to roll the dice. You're going to think I'm going to love it.
I think you're going to love it. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Well, I wasn't super keen on the last musical we watched, Annie, but I mean, I love Dolly Parton's and Burt Reynolds is fun. So that combination, I'm excited. So
you're either going to hate it or you're going to love it, but we'll see. It's just a little pissant country play.
All right. Well, I'm taking off my blue outfit. I'm going to put on my trench coat and my hat because I don't want anyone to see me going into the whole house.
You know what? You'll be surprised. I think you'll be surprised what people are doing in this whorehouse. They fucking love it.
Just assumed intelligence on the part of the audience.
That you would get it. Uh-huh. And, I'm not a big fan of computers, even though I write with one at my newspaper. Mm-hmm. But I sort of have a derisive attitude. I wish I had my old typewriter. And I suppose it's a fear of this stuff. This film got me involved, and I have a new admiration for this whole world and for the people that do know it and do love it. I think it's a very appealing film. In addition, I would say see it in the biggest theater with the best sound system that you can possibly see it in, because I saw it in a big house in New York City, and it was fabulous.
I think that is just so terrific to look at that the better the theater you can see it in, the more overwhelming the experience is going to be. Two very enthusiastic big yes votes for Tron, the dazzling new fantasy film from Walt Disney, which uses human actors and brilliant new animation techniques to take its characters inside the circuits of a computer universe. So Tron's the big one, right?
Yeah, Tron's the big one. That's all for this week.